All right, let's try take two. This is James from SurvivalPunk.com.
And this is his co-host, Mike. How are you doing, bro?
I'm trying to see the challenges in my life and overcome them without without getting pissy.
Does that include what just happened to us?
Yes. We started recording. We're about 3 minutes in, and the computer locked up and did not save the file. Luckily, it was only 3 minutes in.
Right.
Yeah, and it gave us a practice run of this banter that we're bantering about.
This is not what we were bantering about before.
No, but we when we get into it...
I don't think we should banter about the same thing, because you're bantering about your internet problems, and then the computer attacked you.
Right. So, I don't even want to get back into the work thing. Long story short, I thought I would get fired from work yesterday. I did not get fired from work yesterday. It may come in the future. Who knows? I'm a survivalist. I don't care. but yeah, internet problems. I've been having some computer problems, and I've been having some internet problems. I'm on the border of abandoning Firefox because it's just too laggy and just not responsive enough.
Mm-hmm. And this is coming from a man who used to swear by Firefox.
Right, right. So yeah. The internet has just not been working. We had a lightning storm. Last time I recorded here, we had a lightning storm on the way home. It was beautiful, by the way. The whole ride home, it was dry lightning storms. I loved it.
Ugh, it's tea.
You didn't get any pictures?
No, I was driving home. So I got home. I did try to take some pictures of the strawberry moon the other night with my cell phone.
Wait, what's a strawberry moon?
It was supposed to be a rare moon that only happens like once every, like the last one was like in 1919 or something. It's supposed to be super close to the Earth and sort of a strawberry blondish color. I wasn't impressed by it, to be honest. I love the moon. but yeah, I wasn't. I didn't think anything.
It's like the time you told me.
It was just a big full moon.
The time you told me that
super moon.
The super moon. And I swear to God, and I stayed up to watch the super moon, and it looked bigger the night before. So I was convinced everybody was off by a day.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, I agree.
Because I'd remarked the night before that the moon was gigantic, and then the next night it looked like a normal moon, and I'm like, something's amiss.
So yeah, I love the moon quite a lot, and my favorite moon, and I've talked to a friend of mine recently about this, is the harvest moon, when the moon is bright orange.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I love a harvest
moon. Love the harvest moon. So yeah, we're actually doing all new banter. We didn't talk about any of this stuff before. Internet problems, and I overcame them later on in the gadget area. I'm going to talk about an app for your computer that could possibly help you out if you have the same problem I do. Without throwing money at the problem, there's a backward solution you can do.
A backward solution?
Yes.
It seems like a backward solution would just cause more of a problem.
No, it actually worked, and I'll tell you later why it worked, but let's jump into today's episode before the gods smite us again. So what are we talking about today?
All right, let's see. Coming up on the show today, we're talking about preparing for the grid to go down, sunburn resistance through dieting. We're going to be talking about your experiences racing the Tough Mudder. We'll be telling you about 5 tips for helping CrossFitters get strong. We're going to have a couple of things to talk about over Nutrition Corner today, including what I'm currently drinking, this Kava Kava tea and other uses of Kava.
Yeah.
We're going to have our Permaculture Minute, our Wild Edible of the Week, my favorite segment of the show, Mike's Worst Cases. And we're going to be having our Survival Punk gadget for this week, something called Connectify that you have not told me about.
Right, that's what I just alluded to in the banter.
Yes, you alluded to that in the banter. So let's just take it away with our first news story this week, preparing for the grid to go down.
Yeah, I stumbled
across... Is that a danger? Is that something that's in danger of happening as we speak, the grid going down?
It could always go down.
Sunspots, what is it?
Well, actually, there was a coronal mass ejection recently that was pretty big. Fortunately for us, it ejected the opposite direction. But like, had it gone towards the Earth, it would have hit us full on.
Like a full black, like a gigantic EMP.
Yeah, coronal mass ejection. Yeah, it would have knocked out electronics on Earth.
And then the Amish would rule the world.
Yes. Oh, and speaking of that, Firefox is not responding right now while I'm trying to bring up the news story.
Oh, this is lovely.
Yeah, so...
Switch to Chrome, dude.
I'm going to do something. This is... It's honestly unusable. And since, obviously, we know we just rebooted this laptop...
Are we still recording? I'm just wanting to... Okay, yeah. Good.
Preparing for the grid to go down. This comes from the homesteadingandprepping.com website.
.com.
Really?
What happened?
I guess I gotta click the link and go to preparedchristian.net is where this is really at.
Preparedchristian.net?
Yes.
That should be interesting.
Preparing for the grid to go down. I reposted an article from Off Grid Survival called, which I thought Off Grid Survival was a repost site in the first place, so it's a repost of a repost. Anyway, called Half of All Americans Won't Survive 2 Weeks Without Electricity. It explained how fragile the electric grid is and how most Americans won't last 2 weeks without it.
Well, why?
Yeah, I mean, I would. But anyway, I'm not sure that half the population would die off in 2 weeks. In my thinking, it would depend on if trucks are still running and making deliveries of food and medicine. One thing I do know is that if we saw an event that brought the electric grid down, life would be difficult for everyone and impossible for some. That is very true. I have written articles in the past that will be helpful in such an event. One thing to keep in mind about any type of event is that there are five basic human needs to be met. The articles that I think are helpful will be listed under the basic need that is best fit. Some might be listed under multiple basic needs. You wanna read a little bit here?
Yeah, where Mike? Are we?
I was pointing at it so you could take.
Oh yeah. Key. Oh God. Water. If there's no electricity in many places, there won't be running water for long. Some communities have their water pumped in over 200 miles. Knowing where to get water is a must, as is the storage, filtration, and purification of water. Food. I listed some tips for keeping food cold for a short-term power outage and keeping food cold without electricity. Some of these tips could be used to keep food cold for a short time in a long-term event. One might need to know how to cook with the off-grid fuels as well. Shelter. One often overlooked thing when not facing a grid-down event is survival sanitation. If you're connected to the city sewer and water, how to handle human waste is something you're going to want to know and might want to clue your neighbors in on quickly. Knowing how to wash clothes is covered in off-grid laundry. All this is like referring to other articles that they've written.
Yeah, or possibly links to other places. Prepared Christian. Oh, he just got his link foo way up with this article.
Yeah, energy. Having batteries to keep small electronics charged is a good idea. Preparedness and batteries covers some... See, that's what I'm talking about. Some needed information. Having a portable generator could enable power to your home or at least certain portions of it. Having off-grid fuel stocked and knowing... Fuel storage for gasoline and diesel would be important as well. Security. The main thing to keep in mind about security during a prolonged grid down event is that you might see more crime. I covered what civil unrest might look like and what does civil unrest look like and how you can stay safe near it. You might consider keeping watch once it's hit the fan and instituting light, sound, and smell discipline. Hmm. Closing thoughts. I have a couple resources available that have a huge amount of information you might consider printing off to make sure it's available for just such an event. They are 15 must-have downloads. That's great in a power outage. And the link library
if
to get the
print
link.
Them out, they're good.
Yeah. And the link library, hover your mouse over general preparedness. See, this is, he's just advertising for all of his other articles. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like I said, it powers up your link foo. I'm just curious about something real quick.
What are you curious about there?
He's selling a membership program.
Mr. Punk?
Which I am looking to do very soon. I wonder what he's selling his for and if he's... discounts? Yeah. I'm gonna have discounts in my club and probably throw in a patch. Survival Gear Bags does something with them. 10% off all purchases. I'm sure I can get that. I don't see a price... But anyway, you'd want to join the Survival Punk Army before you join this site, because I don't... Look, there's a blank picture there.
A blank picture?
Yeah, Preparedness 3 PNG. Where's the picture at?
That is perfect.
Yeah.
That is just... That's just
donate awesome. Button. I don't... JM Bullion, yeah.
JM Bullion.
They sponsor it everywhere. They're great guys. I love them.
Yeah. But if you go to...
Anyway. Before we get off on a crazy, crazy tangent there.
We're just rambling around here.
Well, yeah. Every once in a while, I like to sort of... I like to give people an insight into, like... There's a whole back behind the scenes to, like, the blogosphere that most people that just read don't ever have any clue on. Like, I've seen it with some of the affiliate links and, like, the email marketing where... the people send me offers, they're like, hey, if you abuse your email list and send this out, if people click through and then order our product, you get like, some percentage of the sale or whatever. And I'm just not, you know, I just don't care about that.
I can understand.
If I genuinely believe in whatever it is, I'll share it with my readers, but I'm not being a bastard like that. So let's jump into article number two.
Okay, what is article number two? Our news article is sunburn resistance through diet. Now, this is talking about eating stuff that'll make you more resistant to getting severely burned by our friend up there that gives us all of our vitamin D.
Yes, and that's very disgusting looking, honey. It looks like jelly.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
It's crystallized.
Anyway, which is a benefit to me. Maybe I could have read this article a while sooner because I got pretty severely burned running Tough Mudder. I always forget that I have been sunburned, so I'm always like, I'm never sunburned, and just I don't apply sunscreen the way most normal people do. Because I'll say I've been sunburned... 3 times in my entire life, maybe.
That's about how much I've been sunburned, actually.
Right.
Of course, so, then again, I don't spend a lot of time outdoors.
Right. And I mean, when I do, I just usually... My family tends to get bronze quickly and not sunburn. Like, my brother David looks like a Mexican, usually. I mean, he's got a good tan, and he just doesn't burn. So, this comes from sustainablebalance.ca.
.ca?
C-A. I think it's a Canadian site. A?
A.
Sunlight Series, Part 10, Sunburn Resistance Through Diet. Previously in this series, the benefits of sunlight in the form of vitamin D production were discussed along with the ramifications of vitamin D deficiency, which most of us are. Along with vitamin D deficiency, another crucial benefit of sunlight, control of circadian rhythms, has been introduced. To top it off, here's another. Sunlight on human skin increases nitric oxide in the bloodstream. Interesting.
What does that mean?
I know it's good for getting vascular pumps. Like, there's a supplement in the bodybuilding world, this nitric oxide, that basically makes your muscles swell up and get veiny and bulgy and transports the blood to your muscles faster.
Oh, kind of like going Super Saiyan level 2.
Yeah, and on a side note, if you take nitrous oxide, it delivers more blood everywhere.
Everywhere?
Everywhere.
Really?
So it's been recreationally used by people.
We know what people are recreationally using that for.
Yeah, so just a heads up, you know, you can get nitrous oxide. Yeah, instead of Viagra. The last post also introduced how UVB radiation, which produces vitamin D, also leads to sunburn, which many people believe leads to skin cancer. 3 types of skin cancer and their accompanying statistics were reviewed, where it was posited that greater than 99% of all skin cancer cases are not fatal. 75% of melanoma cases, the most fatal of the 3 types of skin cancer, were shown to be present on parts of the body that are relatively unexposed to UVB radiation, trunk and thighs as opposed to face and hands. It has also been shown that melanoma rates have been increasing at an alarming rate over the past 30 plus years, while UV radiation exposure rates have, on average, decreased for inhabitants of developing countries. So if skin cancer is going up and people are getting out less, then how is the sun causing skin cancer is what they're leading to there. It does make sense. And it does make sense that when you do tend to get melanoma skin cancer, it's in places that wouldn't be exposed by the sun in the first place. Bottoms of feet, you know, under the stuff like that. So the case,
you'd think after all the millions of years humans have existed on this planet under the sun that we'd have natural immunity to it.
Yeah. The case was made that UV radiation alone cannot explain the massive increase in skin cancer. Something else must be at play. You want
to? Oh, yeah.
You want to read? Thanks. You're terrible at this today. Get on your ball.
Yeah. It is illogical that a natural source of life-giving radiation, the sun, that we as human animals have been exposed to since the dawn of our species is now most commonly implicated as the source of disease, skin cancer, that has only recently become proportionally common, while exposure to this radiation source has, on average, been decreasing. The case has already been made that the sun's radiation has not significantly changed, and yet we do see skin cancer rates increasing and developed in developed countries. UV radiation has a role in the development of skin cancer in that it does not damage skin cells, but UV radiation has not changed. What has changed is the resistance of our skin to UV radiation. Skin that is the least prepared to receive the critically important for health UV radiation will have the greatest risk of being sunburned and have a greater risk of developing skin cancer. As always, with anything health-related, there is a context to healthy sunlight exposure. Sun exposure has only become dangerous when tense sunburns become too easy. As mentioned in the previous post, after receiving a dose of UV radiation, some amount of damage incurs and skin then produces melanin, red, a tan, which then produces the skin for further damage to the UV radiation. Darker-skinned individuals already have a high level of melanin, known as constitutive pigmentation, and thus are much less likely to burn to begin with.
This article is way longer than I thought, so let's get down to the bullet points. Number one, reduce omega-6 fatty acids and increase omega-3. Fatty acids are energy-carrying portions of fats and oils that our bodies use for fuel and also, in some cases, as a structural component in the membranes and cells throughout the body. When it comes to fatty acids, you may have noticed from occasionally reading nutritional labels there are saturated fatty acids, monounsaturated fatty acids, and polyunsaturated fatty acids. The degree of saturation has to do with the chemical qualities of the fatty acid. Essential fatty acid is a carbon atom chain. So each carbon connected to the neighboring carbon. Science doohickey. The bullet point, the takeaway here from this one is sunburns are inflammation. Yes. Wow, this is really long. You should read this whole article because we're not going to. Number two, take it away, Mike.
Increase consumption of antioxidant-rich foods. Okay, now that we've ditched the soybean oil and are eating fish with abandon, what else can we do? Well, once UV radiation hits your skin, it pulls off electrons and breaks molecular bonds through oxidation and creates free radicals. These free radicals are unstable and go to wreak havoc on all sorts of molecules in your body, which can lead to the development of cancer, including skin cancers. This is basically where the sun equals cancer hypothesis, the sun equals cancer hypothesis came from. Unfortunately, most sunscreens don't help this regard. Luckily, there are natural chemicals in plant and animal foods called antioxidants that mop up these free radicals before they can cause any damage. These chemicals are produced by plants to protect themselves from UV damage and other threats. Animals, humans included, can consume these antioxidants and either use them directly or use them to stimulate the production of their own animal versions of antioxidants that do the same thing. Indigenous antioxidants made the body. Before looking at these individual antioxidants, it should be made clear that getting these antioxidants from the whole foods is vastly superior to taking supplements. These compounds work synergistically in combination, so specific antioxidant supplements don't really work, while consuming whole fruits and vegetables does work. Get your antioxidants from whole foods. Examples of these antioxidants are, there are more than what is included in this list, but the following have the most clinical value. Vitamin E, vitamin C, vitamin B, carbonatoid, flavonoids, and polyphenosis.
Carotenoids?
Carotenoids, yeah. These all sound like supporting characters on Star
Flavonoids
Trek.
And polyphenols.
Yeah.
Let's see. Easy on the alcohol consumption. Yep. Eight. Whoa, wait a second. 3 days will be 9 months for me. 9 months sober in 3 days.
High five.
As long as I don't fall off the wagon machines now in 3 days. So yeah, let's see. The suggestion won't be a popular one in some circles. In general, heavy drinking is associated with an increased risk of sunburn and also of melanoma. Perhaps drinking in the sun is causing people to ignore the signs of overexposure, burning. But another theory is that alcohol consumption inhibits the absorption and utilization of many of the above-mentioned photoprotective nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
More of the story, easy on the booze in general, but especially when out in strong sun, and be sure to consume plenty of antioxidant-rich food along with it.
If you're going to be drinking, do it in moderation and do it in dark, dank bars.
Yes. Take away.
Oh, God. Number 4, increased consumption of gelatin-rich foods. This link is not as strong as the others, but there is evidence that increasing the amount of gelatin in your diet could help stave off photoaging. Photoaging is not the same as sunburns per se, but it is the wearing down of wrinkling of the skin due to UV exposure over long periods of time. Gelatin is a rendered mix of amino acids, building blocks of proteins, from the connective tissues in animals, ligaments, tendons, skins, bones, hooves, and the like, which collectively can be called collagen. Collagen is also the most abundant protein in the human body, so eating gelatin to support the creation of collagen makes sense. Consuming gelatin is a rarity these days, and the connective tissues of animals is usually overlooked as a food source in modern times, except for our dogs, perhaps. There is a host of benefits the consumption of gelatin or the preventing of sun-induced wrinkles is just one of them.
Yep, I actually need to go buy some more. I had some grass-fed bone broth that I got, and I just didn't eat it fast enough. So,
but it went bad on you?
Yeah, it started to. I need to get some more. Conclusion, eat well, and sunburn resistance is easier. Let's see,
if you want to read the article in its entirety...
Right, you can go to... Yeah, I told it at the beginning. SunSustainableBalance.ca. Links will be in the show notes, of course. Because there is some good stuff in here. But it would take an entire episode to read it all.
It really would. So, moving on, and it's time for a word from our sponsor, the good folks over at JM Bullion.
The amazing renewable sponsors. So at this point, it makes them going on their second year of sponsorship with the show and the blog. Second year. I give them a trophy, guys. Good going. And if you do need gold and silver online, the best place to go is jmbullion.com, especially since now all orders are free shipping.
All orders
are free shipping, and with silver and gold coins, that can add up really quick.
That is
so best
awesome.
Prices and no shipping. Why would you go elsewhere?
Just make sure you go to survivalpunk.com, click on the banner on the right hand side, take you straight there.
Yes.
All right, and now it's on to our main topic of the day. Our very own survival punk James here competed in a race of sorts, /obstacle course/self-ass-whooping, the Tough Mudder.
Yep, I did the Tough Mudder here in Nashville, which was actually out in Spring Hill on probably an abandoned farm or something.
How'd you do in the Tough Mudder? Did they have like first?
They don't have rankings of any sort.
Really?
So you do it by time, and I believe I narrowed it down to we started the race at about 9:45 and finished at 1:45. And
wow.
The total distance was 10.6 miles. So just about 11 miles.
That's 4 hours.
That's 4 hours.
4 hours, 11 miles.
Yeah.
And this wasn't just like a foot race.
No, there was 2 miles that was pure mud. There's no running through that.
That's just schlogging at that point.
There was the first challenge we came up to was a mud-filled trench with a steep hill on the other side. The first thing we came up to was these slanted, probably 7 foot tall walls to climb over. I got over them. It wasn't the prettiest, but I got over them.
You mean like they show in the Police Academy movies? Wall with the rope?
No, there was no rope, and it was a lean-to like this. So it was like lean like that. So you can't I had to step on the side and like propel myself up over the top and then slide down the side. So that, and then there was the mud trench where you basically just got to jump into the mud puddle and then like jump up the other side. So it's sort of a ramp though. So like you run down and then you like jump up the other side.
Huh.
That was fun. I made a clean jump on the other side.
That's good.
Yeah.
I wish I could have been there to see that.
I tried to get you guys to come out there and watch it as spectators, and it might have been worth the $20 spectatorship fee, because you actually, as a spectator, walk the course on your own spectator-like area. So it has like special like ins and outs and cuts throughs and stuff, so you get to see all the action. Not like just watching it, obviously. You get to go through the course, you know, like, not on the muds, not do the obstacles, but you get to watch it, you know, up close and personal.
There was
a little vendor town and had all sorts of like food and carny stuff. So you guys actually might have enjoyed it.
Yeah, we should have.
When
are you going to compete again?
Next year when they come, I'll definitely run again.
Okay, and we should show up that time. By then we'll be famous and you can follow us around with a camera there, producer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe I'm going to make you train so you can run with me.
No.
Team Survival Punk. Yes.
Maybe you can do the color run with me and Priscilla again this year.
Five Ks. I won't do another run of this size until, like, I'm going to wait a year before I do something this run. But, like, a 5K, that's
nothing compared to the Tough Mudder.
Yeah.
A 10-mile thing, and to you, it's like a 2-mile thing.
Yeah, well, I kind of felt the same way. So I ran with a team at my CrossFit gym, CrossFit Barefoot. The head coach there, Nick, he ran with us. Steve, he's been doing like these races forever. So like he's a veteran of that. He's done a Tough Mudder before. He's done a bunch of other mud runs, and then two more people were on our team, Mike and Marla.
Shout outs
to team. Our team name was the Delirious Green Acrobats.
The Delirious Green
Yes.
Acrobats.
I kind of felt like I was holding everyone back. Nick could have probably done this thing in like an hour and a half. I mean, he was a beast. He just plowed through everything. I kept moving the whole time. So there was that. There were some fun obstacles. I really feel that if you're into survival, you should probably look into one of these races. Because in most survival situations, you're going to have to do an extended walk, probably. And the terrain and stuff may be difficult. There may be obstacles. Maybe not as extreme as this, but there will be obstacles. Mud, water, different terrains. So going into this, I took one of the tips that I learned from survival and hiking and backpacking, which was I wore two pairs of socks.
You wore two pairs of socks?
I wore two pairs of socks. I wore a base layer of an acrylic, you know, artificial fiber material.
Uh-huh.
And then overneath that, I wore a thin weight wool sock. So like a summertime wool hiking sock.
Right.
From REI. And the philosophy behind that is when you wear one sock, the friction between your sock, the shoe sole, and your foot is what causes blisters on your feet.
But if you wear
two socks, that friction is between the two pairs of socks and your shoe and not your foot. And I did go 10.6 miles without a blister. Wow. So that worked. The wool sock does great with wicking away water and keeping heat. So I wasn't as uncomfortable as I thought I would be running through mud for 4 hours. You know, I threw away my shoes when I was done, but I kept the socks and washed them out.
Oh, you threw away your shoes?
I just threw them away. And I walked barefoot the rest of the day until I got back to my car. Because the shoes were destroyed. I know going into that, the shoes would be destroyed.
Well, yeah.
Possibly I could have washed them out, but probably, no, I just threw them away.
You should have bronzed them.
They're on their last leg anyway.
Yeah, you should have bronzed them.
So there's that. Just training, the mental toughness of going that far. Like you were saying earlier that your buddy Todd had to do, how long of a ruck march was it?
I don't even remember what he said.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing.
It was over 10 miles.
Right. I think that training with your bug out bag for distances like that is another benefit. Just because a big part of that is mental toughness.
Yeah.
I mean, your body, I was kind of tired of running, we'll say, at the 2 mile mark.
Well, who wouldn't be?
Yeah. Yeah, because I,
most people, I mean, I even ran without shaper is going to be tired after a couple of miles.
Yeah, and,
especially in mud.
I did not train for this race, per se. I did not do extra training specifically for it.
I did a little hiking, a little running.
I did the CrossFit running that we did. You know, and squats and stuff, and just generally getting more fit.
But you did no training in mud.
I did not train running for more than 1 mile at a time the entire time I trained for this race.
Huh.
And I ran 10.6 miles without training to run 10.6 miles.
Did you regret that?
I was a little sore and tired, but I had some cramp issues, which maybe I could have addressed nutritionally.
You should have.
I didn't do any carb loading like you're supposed to do.
Oh, well, you're afraid of carbs anyway.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't think it's
necessary.
You've
worked carbs so far out of your fucking diet that it's hard to put them back in.
I do put them back in, and I did increase carbs for the race a little bit, i.e., the night before, I ate a sweet potato, and for breakfast, I ate a sweet potato, and then on the ride there, I ate 2 bananas. And then during the race, they had the banana station, and I ate another, like, a half banana there. And
they had a banana station?
They had little free stations throughout. Like, there was water, like, every, like, mile or so. And then they had some electrolyte jelly beans, and I devoured those.
Electrolyte jelly
beans?
Yeah,
I remember while eating them. They're bigger than normal jelly beans. They're, like, jelly in the shape of, like, beans. They're called, like, electrolyte jelly beans or whatever. And they were delicious. They tasted kind of fruit punchy to me.
Oh,
but I was like, I don't care.
Because you're allergic.
I'm allergic to fruit punch. They tasted kind of fruit punchy, but I don't think they were. I would have not finished the race.
No, you'd have died.
Yeah.
You'd have just died. They would have just buried you in the mud.
What was it? There was a part of the race was called the Arctic Enema, and it was a plunge into literally ice-cold water, and then you had to dive under this, like, separator wall, come out the other side, and then climb up the ladder and get out of the ice.
Now, it's my understanding that was really rough on a lot of people. How did you take it?
I actually enjoyed it. I mentally prepared myself. I was like, okay, this is going to suck. Like, everyone was saying, like, that was going to be the worst thing, like, the worst possible thing. And I jumped in. I was like, it's going to be the worst thing. I hit the water, and I was like, oh, this is nice. I'm going to take my time. Yeah, I'm going to take my time. It was, I actually enjoyed it. Some of the people on my team said, you know, they would be up for doing like a polar bear club, and I'll do that for sure. Their point was the temperature change between like 90 to like sub 30 was like what really got them. Like that, normally when you do a polar bear club, it's like 30 degree weather into 30 degree water.
Right.
Which is actually what I don't like about the Polar Bear Club. I wanna go from a hot environment, and I was sweating balls, hot. I actually enjoyed the plunge down to 30 degrees. Like at the before I finally got out of the water, my toes were starting to get a little chilly. But none of that like gasping, none of the seizing up. Like
And you're not a man that likes the cold that much.
I have a love-hate affair with the cold. I like the warm weather.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I'm not big on, like, heat. So, like, I haven't, for the past, 3 or 4 years now, I've not used any heat in my apartment.
Which is awesome. It's also saving you a bundle on your electric.
Right, right. But during the summer, I cannot stand my apartment to go over 70 degrees.
You have to have the air conditioner.
I have to have the air conditioner. I just don't like... When it gets up to 74, it's like... Ugh. And when I'm sleeping, I like it to be in the 60s.
I can't sleep if it's too hot.
Yeah,
thing about it being too cold. You can always throw on blankets.
Right, if it's too hot, you're just sweaty and nasty. Yeah, you can throw off
the blankets, but there's still the possibility of being hot.
Right. So the Arctic Plunge was probably my favorite. There was like a 20-foot tall wall with a rope, sort of like the Police Academy thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a mild fear of heights. It comes and goes.
I get some vertigo going on.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure about my strength because the wall did have like little tiny strips of wood to like rest your feet on, but it was in no way were you going to like stand on them. Like we'll say it protruded out about an inch from the wall. So it was just enough to like sort of rest the side of your foot on while you're climbing the rope. And I went up that and down it surprisingly easy. Like, I would say I flew up. Like, the only thing that slowed me down on the top was...
the barbed wire.
When I put my foot on that, like, tiny ledge, it slipped. And I sort of came off the wall, but I was holding so well on the rope, I just put my foot back on it and just kept going.
Yeah, you're lucky. You could have just plummeted 20 feet to the ground.
Yeah, it would have hurt. I saw one person fall off a wall, and they landed on a wood support beam on their butt.
Oh, my God.
It looked bad. I was that like,
That could fracture your pelvic bone.
It could have, yeah. It could have.
That could screw you up.
And then I don't want to go over all of them, but like we'll wrap up on so the obstacle I was kind of waiting for and expecting for, it was called electric shock therapy. And it's a mud pit. We'll say probably, God, it was probably 40 foot long, probably 40 feet, through this mud, like, bog trench with, like, some hay bales and stuff, forming a giant X in the middle that you had to cross over.
Mm-hmm.
But what made it special was dangling down was, like...
stun guns?
Cattle wire.
The electric cattle wire.
That's cattle wire, yeah. And it was like, it was massive. Like, massive.
Almost sounds like a jackass stunt.
That's what I was going to say.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it was, there was no, if you went through it without touching any of them, you'd have to go super slow and like really, really take your time. And I was warned by one of my coworkers, shout out to Gary, because I know he listens, to don't run headfirst into it, because if you get hit by one, that's kind of a nuisance. But if you run into it and like have like four or five hit you at the same time, it'll knock you flat on your ass. So my strategy was I got up there to the line and I ran head first into these motherfuckers. I just plowed right in there. I got about to the midway point and I crossed the midway point where the hay bales were, and one slapped and hit me in the back so hard like it took my feet out and like I went face first in the mud. I think I put up pictures on the Facebook page of like me falling into the mud, and so that was a good picture. And then I got back up and I took off running again, not caring at all. Even though that was I do not mind being shocked. It's I have a penchant for being shocked, but that was a good shock. Like that really hit me. And then one happened to swing over and hit me in the neck vein.
Oh.
And it was like, pop! Like, it was a lot of pain. That one took me down, too, but it was a lot of pain, like, burning on my neck.
Oh, yeah, I mean, probably
that one was fun.
Oh, probably got you in a nerve.
Oh, yeah. It hit my vein, and then the neck traveled my entire body. So that was fun. I actually enjoyed that. Did you just find pictures?
Well, I have something else, but it was over yours. Did you do your cold water challenge yet?
Oh, no, I ignored that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We should make you do it.
Yeah. So anyway, that was the last challenge after that. Mm-hmm. You went across and you got your headband, and of course, they give you a headband when you sign up and you go through registration, and then at the end... there's a giant two tables of Dosey Keith's beer, which, by the way, is one of my favorites. And I walked pass the free dose of Keith's beer to the trash can and threw my armband in there that entitled me to free beer. Yes.
High five, bro.
Yes. Because after that race, I was like, ah, beer sounds so good.
Of course it does.
I'm just going to drink this water.
That's my boy.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
So,
I'm proud of you for everything you did that day, bro.
I completed.
Everything you didn't do as well.
Yes. I completed it, and that was awesome.
Yeah, it's funny. We just watched a Jackass, the skit called Electric Avenue, where they had just run down this hall, and there's all these tasers and cattle prods swinging around. Reminded me of that. But now it is time for a segment that I have recently renamed. We're no longer having a Nutrition Corner. It's now just called Nutrition Punk. Why? Why not? Okay.
Actually argue that I think Punk Nutrition sounds better.
Punk Nutrition?
Yes.
You know, okay, fine. It's Punk Nutrition there.
Punk Nutrition.
And this week on Punk Nutrition, we're going to talk about 5 tips for helping CrossFitters to get strong.
Yes, let's pull this up. I had an article I wanted to read last time. I'll have to go search for it. It was like the top 10 nutritions that CrossFitters should be taking, because I actually want to be taking them. I got one of those.
What is that?
It's a life straw. It filters like nasty water down to drinkable water.
You don't want to know what I thought it was.
Oh, yeah. You thought it was a fleshlight?
No. Actually, I didn't.
Oh!
I thought it was a
funny side story. I was on Facebook and I saw a post from like a missionary going to go do some work somewhere in the world, and I guess those jackass at the TSA were they had all this stuff out on the table, like you know, harassing him basically, and there was a picture of his fleshlight on the table, and it's like and I don't know how they got it. Someone took a picture and it ended up on the internet. So now,
you know, I salute that guy. Okay, I salute that guy. He's going into a third world country to do the Lord's work, and he just brought something with him to keep him from getting lonely and, you know, getting with the wrong person and coming back with some third world disease.
Right.
That'll make you, like, you know, stuff fall off. So I salute that man in his fleshlight.
I thought it was amusing. Yeah. All right. 5 tips for helping CrossFitters get strong. This looks like a short article. I can read it all. A couple years ago, I took a job at CrossFit as a strength coach. It has been an incredible journey and my proudest achievement. I teach 8 classes a week and follow a plan designed to get people strong and, more importantly, be strong when you feel like you can't go on anymore. My workouts are simple, brutal, and made up of things that have worked for me in my career. I stress keeping the weight lighter and focusing on 100% on form. The hardest part for me is selecting workouts for novice, advanced strength levels that will work for everyone. Here are some things that have really seemed to work. Have everyone use 90% of their one rep max when figuring out weights. If clients don't have a one rep max, then have them use a 3 rep max as their number. More often than not, it will be a guessing game. I have the clients guess at their max and then subtract 20 pounds and go from there.
2. Oh.
You gotta read.
I thought you were reading the whole thing.
You're terrible at this tonight.
Leave me the hell alone. I generally use rep ranges from 2 to 7 for the first exercise. I use 65% to 85% for the main exercise and generally add more volume as the workout goes on.
Number 3. Train the hell out of abs and lower back. Most new CrossFitters seem to lack core strength at first. I agree. We do hundreds of band good mornings. Terrible. Terrible. Back extensions and weighted sit-ups every week. I see very few lower back injuries with my clients. I hate good mornings, by the way. Fuck you, good mornings.
What are good mornings?
It's... You have the barbell on the, like, resting on the back of your neck like you're going to do a squat.
Uh-huh.
And then with sort of, like, loose knees, you know, like a slight bend in them, you bend at the hip and come down.
Oh, my God.
And then go back up. Now, keep in mind, the bar is unweighted. By unweighted, it's, for men, it's a 45-pound bar weight. So, 45-pound bar is... So, I don't like them. They really sort of tweak me. And I'm a little scared of them because that... Doing those weighted, that was the exercise that screwed Bruce Lee's back up, that put him in traction for like 6 months where he wrote his book.
Really?
Well, freaked out about it. Yeah.
That, and you ain't exactly a weevil. I've seen you fall down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Number four. I do a lot of 3-second rest periods on exercises and super high rep sets. This seems to transfer over well to wads and force clients to push past what's comfortable.
And number five. Every Friday, we do a bench wad. It started out as speed bench, and not many people showed up. Then it became a light bench day, and people said it was boring. I switched it to a circuit of bench exercises, which includes press downs, dumbbell presses, military presses, floor presses, and flies. I vary the pounds from 5 to 10, depending on the number of exercises. Oh, excuse me. It's now my most popular class. I noticed most CrossFitters at our box had more of an endurance sport background. Lots of runners, rowers, swimmers, and cyclists. Strength was the variable that needed the most work. It's also nice to add on CrossFit because it allows a certain amount of social time between sets. My class is mostly women, and they are absolute animals. Good stuff here. Except for banded good mornings. I hate those.
Yeah, you can find this article if you want to read it again on
JTSstrength.com and
Juggernaut, Become Unstoppable.
Yes. Links will be in the show notes, of course.
Okay, and the second thing you wanted to talk about on Nutrition Corner this week has something to do with the god-awful cup of tea that I had earlier.
Yeah, you're really picky on stuff, and so I was drinking some kava kava tea. I've heard about it in various circles. Fellow survivalist guy, cool guy, Xavier Hawk, who I'm gonna try to get him on the show one day to talk about bitcoins, probably, or the off-grid community has, or something. I like the guy. I've exchanged a few emails with him before, and I need to talk to him. So anyway, so kava kava tea is one of the most common drinks in Hawaii and Polynesia, Micronesia, blah, blah. Kava, which comes from a type of pepper plant, is used by many people for insomnia and anxiety. It looks a bunch of other stuff, too. Kava has components which are known as...
kava lactones.
Yes, those. The belief is that kava lactones have an effect on how high the levels of neurotransmitters in the blood are. It has been proven that kava does have an effect on gamma-aminobutyric acid, dopamine, norepinephrine.
There you go.
Kava is very good for calming effects when you're under stress. It can also help you get a good night's sleep. You've memorized my code. Some people have found that giving kava kava tea to children that are prone to hyperactivity helps calm them... helps keep them calmed down more effectively than prescription medications.
Probably because they're all like, Mommy, I'll sit down and be calm if you make me stop drinking the grass clippings.
Yeah, you're just... your flavor, like... You have a weird...
I'm sorry, it just tasted like something that was strained out of my pool's filter.
Yes, I actually enjoyed the kava kava tea plain, and, It does have some of the effects it's talking about. So for this episode, to begin with, we brewed an entire bag full of kava kava, and
yes, we did.
I drank probably 3 to 4 cups of it.
I drank one cup.
You drank one cup. Yeah,
And I'm lucky. I'm keeping it down.
I
had to add a hell of a lot of honey to it.
I'm sorry.
It just tastes nasty.
I think it tastes good.
I'm glad you do.
But yeah, I've drank enough that I'm starting to like, I can feel it working on the neurotransmitters in my brain.
You can feel your neurotransmitters?
Sort of, I can feel stuff going on in the frontal lobe up there.
Really?
Yes, it's like a not bad headache or something.
Yeah. Apparently his shit's done kicked in. I don't know what's happened to my cup.
Well, you drank one cup.
Yeah, I drank. I'm lucky I got that down. I had to force myself, man. That's just some nasty stuff.
So yeah, I'm trying to drink more teas and less colas and less Rockstar energy drinks. So yeah, Kava Kava tea. I enjoy it. I'm sure there's a tea out there for everyone. You said you got catnip tea and liked it.
That catnip tea is really good. See, catnip actually is from the mint family. And it doesn't taste bad at all. Especially when you add honey to it. I have to add honey to tea.
I don't do sweeteners really in anything. I have some stevia.
Honey's just one of the nature's perfect foods.
The kava is like so strong, like it numbs my tongue when I take a drink.
I had that effect a minute ago, and it threw me off for a minute.
Numbs your tongue?
Yeah, it doesn't. You didn't get any. Well, you had so much honey in yours, though. I mean, yeah, it definitely, like, there's a numbing sensation.
Why don't you say so?
Yeah,
it didn't do it for me.
Yeah, well, you don't like anything.
I like a lot of things.
If it's not pizza or deep fried, you really don't like it.
I've never had deep fried pizza.
You're going to, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
So yeah, check out Kava Kava Tea. See if you can get some ordered. Give it a try. It has lots of health benefits.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
Give it a try.
So yeah, what do we got next?
Okay, next it is time for our. Permaculture Minute. Okay.
Awesome.
This week's Permaculture Minute from the Permaculture Playing Card Set, we're going to do the Two of Spades this week.
Awesome.
Which is Rumford Fireplace.
Rumford.
When compared to a rocket mass heater, the Rumford Fireplace provides quick heat and an ornamental flame. The Rumford Fireplace is designed to heat people and the room rather than cooking food. The traditional fireplace, or the oxbow cooker, is designed to send the heat outside if you don't get too hot while cooking on or near the fire. Use the right fireplace for the right jobs. See, it's nice. Interesting because it shows the traditional fireplace.
Right.
Kind of box-shaped.
Right.
But the Rumsford fireplace, it has
walls that are more
trapezoidal instead of rectangular, and it reflects the heat back into the room instead of sending it up the... Sending it up the chimney.
Losing
there.
All your heat. Yeah, awesome.
Yep. One thing you got to watch out for with fireplaces, I've discovered, is it will literally suck all the heat out of the rest of the house.
The Mythbusters literally proved that to be true.
Yep, they proved it. So it has to be.
So what do you have in the...
Yes, it's time for... It's
the new Wild Edible book I have this week, The Forager's Harvest.
Okay, wow, you got this at McKay's. Okay, sweet. All right. This week's wild edible is Spring Beauty, Claytonia there are many who say that we should not eat Spring Beauty because it is such a beautiful spring wildflower. And it actually is a pretty little wildflower. It's kind of all white with some purplish overtones, five petals, kind of veiny looking. They are right about one thing. It is quite pretty, but I am not yet convinced that there is any merit to limiting my diet to ugly things. If that were the case, I wouldn't be foraging at all, and there is not a single wild plant that I find unattractive. And while I must admit that subjectively some plants really do please the eye more than others, Spring Beauty, no disrespect intended, is not near the top of my list. Would this hands-off attitude be so wildly espoused if the plant happened to go by a less eloquent sobriquet, like Hepatica, Ramp, Baneberry, or Hagar? I think not.
Sammy Hagar?
Yeah, Sammy Hagar. All right, let's just move on from his opinions on it. Description. Spring Beauties are in a purslane family along with several other edibles such as bitterroot, purslane, and miner's lettuce. A few botanists even classify miner's lettuce as in the same genus. There are about a dozen species of Spring Beauty in North America, with most of the diversity in the West. All Spring Beauties are small, fleshy perennials, less than 10 inches tall. Because most of my experience is with C. virginica and C. carolina, the following discussion will focus on... range and habitat. Harvest of... I like the other book better. It gave him more a subset... it's been talking about...
It's very long.
It's like 6 pages. I'm not reading 6 pages on the Spring Beauty.
No. I just wanted you to summarize it.
Okay, well, that's my summary.
Okay.
Okay, and coming up is our next sponsor ad. We're going to talk about the good folks over at Survival Gear Bags.
Yeah, so Survival Gear Bags, go check them out for all your survival gear bag needs, where you could get your survival gear bags and then items to put in your survival gear bag, such as the Olight S10 Baton flashlight. That's amazing. Frog lube to clean your weapons with, which is what I recommend. Yeah, check out Kelly Gonjo, John Doe over there at survivalgearbags.com. Click on the link in survivalpunk.com.
Okay, and it'll take you straight there, and we'll get credit for the sale. And speaking of stuff to put in your bag, you always could use a good survival gadget, so let's just move right into that with our Survival Punk Gadget of the Week.
So I'm still testing this out, but it did mostly work. They want me to buy it to do more stuff, but it did in the trial, it did work well. So I mentioned briefly in the opening segment that I have had some internet issues. So the big internet issue right now was, first the Ethernet port in my cable modem went out, so then it couldn't send any data to my wireless router. Well, now it looks like the Ethernet port in my wireless router went out. So whereas the new modem they brought me is sending out information, because I can plug my laptop directly into the modem and get internet, the router, which I can connect to, but doesn't have a connection to the internet. So something's broken between, and it's not the cord, I've tried that, I've tried to fix it and tried to fix it, so
I'd be crying at this point.
I need to buy a new router, but I'm on a budget, I'm not trying to spend extra money, so it's going to be probably a couple more days to a week until I can get another router.
You're having to rough it.
So, which is not bad, because I can just plug my laptop into that and then put it on a cord. But my Apple TV and my cell phone, which uses the internet signal at home to get its signal to make phone calls and stuff, I get it through Wi-Fi, through the Wi-Fi calling app on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really getting any service. And I couldn't watch TV on the Apple TV because it doesn't have a wired connection. It's only Wi-Fi.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
So, I'll just pause this real quick. So, I had an idea, and I went looking for a way to do it, and I found an app. I may learn how to do it without the app, because there's a couple of limitations, although I don't know.
Now, what is this app you keep talking
okay,
about?
How
can that help you connect to the internet?
So before, when the internet was down, I did a trick with my cell phone, which I don't need good reception there, but I had to set the cell phone in the window and turn on Wi-Fi tethering, which turned my cell phone into a Wi-Fi router with its cell phone signal.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, and that's how I was able to publish a post or two that way. I mean, it's kind of slow. It's not that great, but it gets the job done. So I began thinking, was there a way to reverse that process and turn my laptop and tether my other devices using the laptop that I had the internet cord plugged straight into? So Connectify does that. It turns your laptop into a Wi-Fi hotspot that the other devices can connect to.
Really?
So turning on that using Connectify, I was able to get the Wi-Fi calling on my phone at home and then use the Apple TV to watch some YouTube videos.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Were there any loading problems or lagging?
The Connectify that I have is a trial version and thus was limited to 90 minutes at a time, and then it was supposed to be like a two-day limit or something.
Uh-huh.
So with the paid version, which is on sale for like, I don't know, $20 or something.
That ain't bad.
That's not bad at all.
Is there a monthly fee or anything like that that goes
along? I don't believe so.
I believe so?
Okay. I believe it's $20 to buy the program outright.
Oh, that's good.
It looks like there's a way to go into your settings and set up an ad hoc Wi-Fi network using your computer, which I'm going to look into because... Mm-hmm. The 90-minute cap and then the whatnot, but
right.
I would recommend Connectify is super easy. You install it and then you hit start and then You have a Wi-Fi hotspot. Damn. For ease of convenience, if you're not tech savvy and you're not going to dig into the settings and set up an ad hoc Wi-Fi network, then Connectify is probably your solution. I just thought it was neat to note there was a reverse tethering option.
What's reverse tethering?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Instead of using your cell phone to tether your laptop with, you're using your laptop to tether your cell phone with and other devices.
Snuggins.
Yeah, so it's backward doing that. And I thought that was... I like to usually throw some creativity and ingenuity at problems before I throw money at them.
Right.
So I didn't want to break my budget to go buy a $50, $60 router right now.
No, of course not.
So instead, I'm just going to create the ad hoc Wi-Fi network using Spotify right now to get my internet.
Sweet.
So I just need to know that option is there, and I could use that in the future. Especially since, you know, my business, ServoPunk, kind of relies on the internet.
You think?
Short of moving into a Starbucks and using their internet. What do we got next?
Coming up next, is my favorite portion of the show. It is time for America's favorite rapidly spreading game called Mike's Worst Cases, where I take our very own survival punk, James, and trivia his ass. I will ask him five questions from an extremely outdated board game called The Worst Case Scenarios. And if he could get 3 out of 5 of them correct, he wins our grand prize. And if he fails to get 3 out of 5 correct, he will be severely punished. Survival Punk James, are you ready for this week's Trials and Tribulations?
I sure am.
Well, let's take it right away. Let's see here. Our first question for you today. How to remove an insect from your ear?
How would you answer that question?
You shut up. It is time for you to answer the question. A. Do you immerse the victim's head in water, then slowly tilt the head so the insect floats out?
Hmm.
B. Fill the ear with mineral oil to drown the insect, then remove it with tweezers.
Interesting.
Or C. Lay the victim on his or her side and have someone carefully blow smoke through a straw into the victim's ear until the insect exits.
Actually, smoke sounds like the least evasive would definitely work without having any effects. Like pouring mineral oil in your ear, that might not be the best solution. Pouring water in your ear, that might not be the best solution. Smoke, I see, is like the insect being, no, I'm done, I'm out of here, and it not causing damage to your skin cells and possibly passing through the ear-brain barrier. I'm going with smoke.
The correct answer is fill the ear with mineral oil to drown the insect, then remove it with tweezers. Which, okay, and let me go ahead and tell you the basic flaw with the number 3, lay the victim on their side and carefully blow smoke through a straw into the victim's ear until the insect exits. Here's the problem. Your ear, the outside of it, is very big, but it gets narrower and narrower as it gets in there. And insects, if you've ever noticed, can't walk backwards. They go in one direction and can't back out.
Hmm.
So blowing smoke in there to try to irritate them, is it going to do anything except make them wiggle around in your ear that much more and fuck around with stuff in there? Pardon my language. So that is...
I kind of disagree. Can I put a bug in your ear and try all 3 methods?
I have already had a bug in my ear, and they had to take it out with tweezers.
Terrible.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
That was a rough night. I called out of work.
Yeah.
Even though I had the bug out of my ear by the time my work was rolling around, but screw it, I'd been up since like 10 o'clock the night before.
Oh, wow.
Okay, 2, how to identify paralytic shellfish poisoning?
Oh, wow.
A, immediately after eating, the victim's mouth will become numb. He or she will be weak and lightheaded, lose coordination, and have a rapid heartbeat. B, 1 or 2 hours after eating shellfish, the victim will experience a tingling sensation in the head and neck, followed by uncontrollable vomiting and diarrhea. Or C, a few hours after eating shellfish, the victim will become extremely tired and develop a severe headache.
I'm going to go with A.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct. You actually got that one. All right.
I don't think paralytic poison makes you vomit.
No. It tends to make you paralyzed.
Yeah.
Still. All right. You're one for one so far.
Ooh.
Okay. How to prevent developing skin cancer.
Oh, we just read all about this.
Yes. A. Keep in mind, this was 13 years ago. A. Spend as much time in the sun as you like, but always wear sunblock with SPF 30. Reapply it frequently. B. Always avoid sun exposure to the sun during peak hours, and wear sunblock with at least SPF 15 during any exposure. C. Only spend time in the sun in 30-minute increments.
Oh, 14-year-old logic was really dumb. Sometimes I just want to pick the dumbest answer, and sometimes that's right.
What did you have that fork in?
The pork I was eating.
And you're rubbing it through your hair.
Yes.
You are planning on showering when you get home, correct?
No. Of course I am.
I certainly hope so.
I'm gonna,
it is making your hair nice and shiny,
I'm
going to
go with... There's no residue left on here. I ate it all off.
I'm sure you did.
I'm leaning towards B. I mean, my gut says it's something stupid like C, but I'm going to go with B.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct. Always avoid exposure to the sun during peak hours and wear the sunblock with at least SPF 15 during any exposure to the sun. So you've gotten 2 out of 3 questions correct so far. You could win the whole shebang with this one.
Ooh.
Okay. How to treat a diver who has an air embolism.
Ah, crap.
Do A, place the victim in a head-down position with his or her left side and administer oxygen if available. B, send the victim back underwater as soon as possible to resurface more slowly.
Huh.
Or C, lay the victim on his or her back with legs elevated, massage the arms and legs, moving upward toward the heart.
I'm going to go with B. I really don't know.
Send the victim back underwater as soon as possible to resurface more slowly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just drowned our victim.
Yeah.
The correct answer was A, place the victim in a head-down position on his or her left side and administer oxygen if it is available.
Sure.
Yeah, and the other one, massaging the arms and legs upward toward the heart, is trying to send the embolism to the heart, and that will also kill you. All right. It is down to our final question.
Final countdown!
Question number 5. How to remove skunk spray from the outside of a car? A. Wash the car with hot water and ammonia. B. Spray the car with hydrogen peroxide, then wipe it off quickly. Or C. Wash the car with hot water and vinegar.
I'm going to go with vinegar because it does everything.
The correct answer was B. Spray the car with hydrogen peroxide, then wipe it off quickly. Oh, I am so sorry, Survival Punk James, but you have lost this week's edition of Mike's Worst Cases.
Shame, shame.
Which means I'm going to now stab you with that fork.
Nah. So...
You get two... No,
that's enough.
2 for flinching. 2 slaps to the head. And a poke. Alright, there we go. Okay. And if you want your products sold in a place that's going to be advertised all over the country now, all you have to do is contact James at survivalpunk.com and he will cut you a deal for selling your products live on our air. You want to be a sponsor like JM Bullion and the good people over at Survival Gear Bags? Just contact James at survivalpunk.com. Get your stuff advertised here. All right, now it's time for our celebrity invite of the week. And this week I'm actually inviting a celebrity that's, well, he's a pseudo-celebrity. He's very famous in his neck of the woods,
yeah,
so to speak. And he's now famous thanks to one of the channels. I think is it the Discovery Channel or the Science Channel, which it's one of them. The man, he lives in the woods, has been for years. He used to be living in the real world, but he moved into the woods. And has been happy there ever since, living a barefoot existence, pretty much. A man named Mick Dodge, he lives up in the forest, up in Washington State.
In Washington State!
Yeah, you know Mick Dodge.
I wanted to read an article about him, I kept putting it off. Yeah, I did. He was interviewed, and he's going to have some sort of TV show I want to watch.
Yeah, The Legend of Mick Dodge, I've seen a couple episodes.
You've seen a couple episodes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. was pretty good.
Yeah, it's The Legend of McDodge. It's a very amusing show. He actually, oh, God, remember the episode where he made the jam juice?
No!
Okay, so, just for everyone listening, that will be our show topic next week. I'm going to watch that show, because I read a big, long article about this guy, and I was like, wow. I was really impressed, and he was like, I don't know how this TV show is going to work out. They seem like jackasses, but maybe people will, it looks like something fun to do.
Oh, I mean, it was good so far. I mean, and he loves...
It looked like he was in incredibly well health for his age. Like, physical, he's been eating like, you know...
He's been living off the land and foraging.
Yes, foraging and then eating roadkill and stuff. And his gut bacteria is amazing. So, yeah, Wow, I didn't know the show was out. So I'm going to start.
Oh, yeah, it's been out for a while now. This is what you get for not ever watching.
I'm
going
to have to go illegally download some episodes off the interwebs and watch them.
Oh, yeah. Now, the whole first season should be out by now.
Nice.
Probably on DVD for all I know. I mean, it's an amusing show. Like, for example, it showed the cameraman following him through the woods, and he rounds this corner, and then all of a sudden the cameraman rounds the corner, and you see the camera shooting back and forth. He's like, Mick, where'd you go? I mean, he was out of frame for, like, literally 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And he keeps walking. He's completely lost Mick. And then all of a sudden you hear Mick yelling from behind him, hey, where are you going? And you turn around and he's crawling out of a hole that he had jumped in real quick.
Oh, wow.
Because he's been living in these woods. I mean, and not just one spot in the woods either. All over the woods. He's got, like, cubby holes and little, I won't even say huts, because he's got, like, hollowed out logs and trees and all this stuff that he lives in.
He stores his stuff in.
He stores his stuff all over. I mean, a huge, huge section of that woods. I mean, and when I say huge, I mean several miles worth. I mean, and he's got friends in there, too. He's got an apprentice that always wears a kilt.
I'm going to watch the show, yeah.
Oh, it's definitely worth it.
Good for bringing that up, because that was weird, because I literally wanted to bring back up that article and do it for a news segment one week, and I kept forgetting and pushing it off. So, yeah, that's going to be our next week's show topic.
So, yeah, so definitely. I mean, I seriously doubt Mick Dodge doesn't even know what a podcast is. But if anybody out here who knows him, knows somebody that knows him, tell him that he has got an open-ended, open-door invite onto the show. And if at all possible, get Discovery Channel to fly us out there, because I seriously doubt he'll travel here to do it.
Yeah, I am.
He hasn't been out of the Washington woods in decades. Yeah. He's been in there for like 20 years, man.
Yeah.
I know, and he's a kook. He's a very amusing. It's funny, he's got like roots tattooed all over his feet.
Neat. Yeah, I can't wait to watch this show. I didn't know it was out. So. All right, let's wrap this up.
This has been I'll say this has been a pretty good episode. It's had its technical issues and everything, but we marched on like good podcasters do.
Yes.
So, that's Mike's advice for this week, too. You just got to keep moving on. You can't don't sweat the small stuff and let everything just, you know, you play the cards that you're dealt.
Put your head down, keep moving, and you'll finish the tough mutter.
Exactly. So, I'm Mike.
And this is James.
This has been Survival Punk. Just remember, keep on trucking.